When most people apply for OSAP, they think, I'll probably have some money to buy food, rent, and
The
maybe a
important
little
things.
bit of tuition. All my dad was thinking was, we're going to Costa Rica. Okay, let's jump into the episode. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Virgin Investors Podcast, where we talk about student investing. In today's episode, we'll be talking about investing in yourself. In the last episode, we talked about investing in certain types of assets, but today you are the asset, and we'll talk about investing in oneself. On today's episode, I'm joined by Delaney Clark.
Hi, thank you for having me again. I'm very excited to be back. I loved doing the last episode we did, and I gained so much knowledge, so I just can't wait to be a part of this one.
It's gonna be fun. Hopefully, this one is as engaging as the last one we did together, which was credit scores,
Yes.
episode 3. So, if you haven't heard that one, please go back, watch it, and
Go check it out.
yeah, see if you learned something. Now, before we jump in today's episode, I would like to just make a few disclaimers. First, if you're new, welcome to the podcast. If you're old, thank you for coming back. Now, if you want to find more about us, you could find our Instagram at virgin.investors. If you have a question or an episode idea, please email us. We're always open to any ideas, and we can make an episode about anything anyone wants, really. And you could email us at virgininvestors@yahoo.com. And finally, we have our show notes up. I know that it took a while, but they're finally up, and that is at virgininvestors.info. So on today's episode, we'll be discussing what pay yourself first means, where to do it, and why it's so important.
So the pay yourself first is a common phrase used in personal finance. It pretty much means to set money aside into a savings account, investment account, and into your emergency fund immediately from your paycheck or your source of income.
And this is a great way to ensure that you're keeping up with your investments from month to month, since it's often easy to forget about them or just put them off.
So even before you pay your bills, this plan is really so that you aren't using your money on things you don't need. It just helps you budget.
And a great quote that I really love from one of my personal heroes, Warren Buffett, is, "Don't save what is left after spending. Spend what is left after saving."
That's a really good quote.
I really do like it. And, Warren Buffett is one of the greats. When we talk about like goats of sport teams or sports, Warren Buffett is like the goat for investing. And so if you want to learn more, you could literally just search up Warren Buffett quotes, and that's enough to fill a book. So let's jump right into the first way you could pay yourself first or invest in yourself. And the first one is savings. And I know we talk about this in nearly every episode, but I think it's a very important topic to really go through. And savings, once again, is just putting money aside. And this is typically for people who don't want to invest money, but want to at least see some appreciation in their money. And this is a good way to fight against inflation. And you'll hear me say it 1,000 times more. It's a good hedge against inflation. It's one of the few ways that you could fight it without actually investing in the investments that we talked about in episode 4. Now, again, I do not recommend this method. I think the opportunity cost far outweighs the benefits that you could get from a high savings interest account. And I know we were researching just earlier, like your savings account was less than
Less
zero
than
point.
0.05, which is n nothing. That's
No.
y you don't get anything back from that.
Like it's tough. You would need a substantial amount of capital actually in that account.
Which for university students is extremely unrealistic. The amount you would need to make a decent comeback.
Yeah, no, I don't think it is really worth it for students. I think students are going to be better off investing in, once again, those investments that we talked about in episode four. So if
Yeah.
you missed that episode, make sure to go
It's
back.
definitely one to listen to before this one.
Yes, they build off each other.
Perfectly.
And just going back to the savings, if you want to start building a large sum of capital, maybe you're thinking of buying a house down the line, hopefully, you'll need money appreciating. It's almost not enough to just work, spend, and then have the change
Yeah.
start building. Like, you need to consciously set money aside. And so that is what these savings are. Now, this topic isn't too broad. Like, this is very simple, very straightforward. The other ways to pay yourself are probably more interesting and you'll get more from it, but we just have to go through everything.
We have to go through the basics in order to get to the good ones. They're all
Yes.
important.
Yes, they are.
So the next one is an emergency fund. So as we said earlier, this is putting money again into a savings account in case there is an emergency, like your car breaking down, unemployment, you got sick and your work isn't going to cover for you. So this is different from just putting money into a savings account because this is for a purpose. So normally this would be in a completely separate account, so you can't access it because if you can access it, there's no point
You're gonna spend
in keeping it
it.
there because you're not going to be able to pay for your car breaking down if you have to. So typically they say an emergency fund should cover 3 to 6 months of your expenses. Some say 6 months to a year, which is on the high end.
Yes,
But
it's very cautious.
as university students though, it's extremely hard, especially when majority of us might not have a stable income. With school and everything, you might not be working the 20-hour weeks you need to in order to set aside money. So just even anything, like putting away $1,000 to start and then $20 every paycheck, $10 every paycheck, it really does add up over time though.
Really, just contributing what you can.
And when you can is the most important part, and just being able to maintain that.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. Just being consistent as well, as much as you can be, right? Since obviously university students, like, we know it.
Yeah.
It's tough. Like, a lot of people
It's
are
very tough.
leasing, and when you lease, you're paying out a large sum of money. You could be looking at $10,000 a year.
Easily.
And so it's tough to save when you already have so much on your plate.
Yeah.
And even with the student loans, you have some debt, and typically you'd want to pay off your debt first before you start building an emergency fund. Since if you're getting charged interest, let's say at 1.5% interest, well, you're losing money. Like, if you leave your money for the emergency fund, that money is actually depreciating in value.
Yeah. I do think that you like credit card debt, 110% pay that off first because that is a monthly interest rate. But for university students, one of the big debts that we're in is OSAP, which we'll talk about later. We go into detail with that later. But that's harder to pay off because you don't have to pay it off until either you stop full-time schooling or once you graduate. So like there are different debts to pay off first that are primary, and then there's the secondary ones that are just as important, but you still need to put money away into an emergency fund. I would say some are more important.
Yeah, and just to make a note on the credit cards being paid, like the interest rate,
Yeah.
typically these rates are anywhere from 20 to 40%,
Yeah, a
right?
huge. You don't want to
So
miss that.
there's not that much room to move around. And when you're talking, and you said monthly, like,
Yeah.
what we mean by that is just that's around like two, sometimes 2.5% a month, whereas your OSAP is going to be like 1 to 6% over the year.
Yeah.
So there's a huge difference when you're messing with credit card debt.
Yeah, I remember there was something you said, you mentioned to me earlier off air. And it was just if you put your money into a high interest savings account, you're gonna get not that much back. You're gonna get maybe less than 1%, but because of the credit card debt that you might be in, like you just said, the
Yeah.
2.5%, you're losing money. You're not gaining anything. You'd gain more to
Yeah.
pay it back, even though it's still coming out of your pocket and it visually might not look that way, you're still saving the 1.5% difference.
And this is a little off topic, but I think it's very
Yeah, go
important
for it.
information. Like, with credit card debt, you're probably better off not even investing in the stock market. Mm-hmm. Since with the stock market, you can expect to yield 5 to 12% over the year. Whereas with credit card debt, you're paying 20 yeah. plus percent on yeah. the year. So when you break that up into months, maybe in the stock market, if you're doing really well, you could do 1% per month.
Yeah.
But
if you're lucky.
Yeah, but if the credit card, that's 2% automatically. Like, there's no way around that.
Yeah, it's a solid statement that you can't change it. So back to the emergency funds, we yes. got a little off topic, but it all has to do with emergency funds. There was a study done by Investopedia that showed in 2018, 23% of Americans had nothing saved for an emergency. And to put that into even bigger numbers, 23% of Americans is roughly 75 million people. So 75 million people had nothing saved for an emergency just 2 years ago, meaning that a year after coronavirus hit and yes. millions of people were put out of job and 75 million people didn't have anything to sustain themselves.
That's a scary statistic.
That's a lot of people.
It's nearly one-fourth.
Yeah.
That is extremely scary.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show it's difficult to save, but if you could consciously make the decision that, mm-hmm. okay, I'm going to start saving, I'm going to start improving my personal finance,
mm-hmm.
then it becomes a habit.
Yeah. And emergency funds, like, they aren't for getting the dog if you want a dog or buying that new yeah. purse. Emergency funds are strictly for emergencies. Like, imagine if you started it in university, put that first $1,000 down and then $20 every paycheck. If you don't have an emergency for the next 10 years, it's $20 every paycheck that you'll have in 10 years.
You'll like, have a substantial
amount. It just makes sense to start now. Even if you're only making $100 a week, put 10. It doesn't have to be all of it. Just put a little amount so it will help you when you need it.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I think also for students, it's kind of a gray area since it's always going to be, well, should I be investing? Should I be putting money in an emergency fund or... Mm-hmm. Do I pay back my debt? And I think a lot of it comes down to your own risk management. Like, do you feel comfortable investing money? Or do you feel comfortable not investing, but still wanting to see your money appreciate in value? Well, then I would say the emergency fund would be for you if you don't feel like you could take on the risk. And I know a lot of people don't like to take the risk since they consider it gambling. Which, as we know now, it's not, but
yeah,
it can be daunting and scary. So I wouldn't blame anyone for doing it. I don't recommend it.
If you had any questions or wanted to go into further detail, because I know we kind of bounced around a little bit on that, please feel free to DM us, message us, do anything, and we'll have an in-depth further conversation because there's a lot you could talk about with putting money aside for emergencies and all these different things.
And now, just for some tips of what makes up a good emergency fund, the first tip would be to have the funds in a different bank account so it's not as accessible, like we talked about earlier.
Super important.
You have to jump through some hoops to get that money so that you don't buy that dog that you're talking
don't
about.
Even carry the card on you. Keep it somewhere else. Don't even put it in your wallet, because once it's in your wallet, you're going to spend it.
Make it a little more difficult for you to spend it.
Lock it in a box.
Yeah, so it's not worth it
to
when you're going out to eat to spend that money. It's not worth it since you have to do so many things for it.
In the moment, it definitely might seem like the right thing to do, but trust me, as somebody who's needed emergency funds and has spent it on things I don't need, it's not worth it. In the moment, things are not worth not having enough for an emergency.
The second tip that I would suggest is, and this one can be a little difficult, is trying to locate a high yield savings account. And this would be typically with an interest rate of 0.65 to 0.9% rather than what your savings account is, which is 0.05%.
Less than that.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And then have your money sitting there, accumulating, growing as you go your day to day while still contributing to it.
And it might not sound like a lot, but it's something.
Yeah, over time, you'd be surprised.
Yeah,
you'd be
especially
surprised
if you're not touching it.
Yeah, with the compound interest, it works miracles.
Mm-hmm.
So let's move on to probably my favorite way to pay yourself first, to invest in yourself, and that is investing, period. Having an investment account where you're buying stocks or ETFs, REITs, all of that good stuff. Now, when I say put the money in the investing account, you have to have the intention to actually buy things with that. You can't just funnel money to your Questrade account and then let it just sit keep it there. Yeah, like you have to go through the motions. You put the money in your TFSA, and then eventually you go and you buy some hopefully blue chip slash safe investments that you could see large returns in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And a good tip for university students is start early and wait until you're done university to go back to that portfolio and cash out, for a lack of better terms.
Yeah, leave it in there, honestly. Like, we've said this again, just keep it in there. If you don't need it, you won't need it, if that makes sense. Like, you might think you do, but there's other ways to get around if you need a quick cash. Like, as soon as you put it into your TFSA, don't touch it. As hard as it might be, just leave it there.
I know a lot of people like to follow the rule of thumb that once you put this in your TFSA, forget it. Like, treat that money as though you will never see it again.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually...
Which is what we do.
Yes. And then eventually, once you take it out, you're going to be actually shocked at that compound interest. And I'm not saying actually forget it. Like, still monitor your stocks and check up on things. See your dividend payments coming in. Yeah, reinvest the dividends that you've been making, and so on and so forth. But don't assume that you're going to be taking that money out for anything less than an emergency. And that segues perfectly into the next point that I wanted to talk about, is that this investment account can act as your emergency fund.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in university, hopefully you have some financial backing. Hopefully there's someone either in your family or friends who can help you if you're going through a rough time financially. But if you don't, at least you have some capital that you can liquefy if you need, like if your car breaks down. Typically, I would recommend people not to do this, but you know, emergencies happen, things happen, and that's just life. Now, moving on, I wanted to highlight another important point. And this point is essentially just the debt that most students will have, and that are student loans.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for us in Ontario, our student loans typically come from OSAP.
Yes.
And how that works is that OSAP only starts to take interest from us after 6 months that we graduated, or if we drop out permanently.
Yeah, which is nice of them. It gives us a chance to get on our feet once we're out of university or college.
And it makes it very easy for us to invest.
Mm-hmm.
Since when we invest money, we're essentially racing a clock, right? We want to see if we can make a return in the 4 years before OSAP starts to charge us interest.
Mm-hmm.
And now the goal of this is to see if we can make more money than we have. Instead of paying OSAP back immediately, let's say our OSAP was $1,000. Now, if we put that money in the stock market, we get $1,100 back. Well, we netted $100
mm-hmm.
than if we were to just pay the $1,000 back right away.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, I believe, is an important point, because although we say you want to get debts out and eliminate debts as quick as possible, it's also important to know what debts we can, you know, work with and which ones we can't, like credit card debt.
Yeah, OSAP is a weird one, because I know there's a variety of people who want to pay it back right away and work full-time summer jobs just to be able to pay it off yearly. But then I know there's other people who work the summer jobs, but they still don't pay back their OSAP because it's just a large sum of money that you have, which, like you said, you could invest or you can put into other things, which is something that I'm doing, is I work this summer and I'm not putting it towards my OSAP because we have it in the stock market right now.
Yes.
Which is a perfect time to have it, because with everything that crashed, it's were able to make more return from it, which is why I chose to put it in the stock market rather than put it back to pay off my OSAP. But at the same time, because you don't have to pay it back, which like my program is 4 years and Ruben's program is 4 years, so we have 4 years to pay it back. It, like you said, it's a perfect chance to race against time and be able to make it back, so then you can keep the money that you made from the summers, and all of your returns is just going back to paying it back. So you didn't really lose anything because you don't have to pay back any interest or anything. So it just, it's pretty much invisible until until after you graduate.
Now, I would note that I wouldn't take the OSAP money and go to Costa Rica.
Oh, wait, yeah. A lot of people do that.
Yes. I believe my father did something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But what I would recommend is maybe if, you know, once again, it's all about you. You know yourself better than anyone. Mm-hmm. If you have that risk tolerance, if you're committed, yeah. if you're passionate, then I would say it's a good opportunity to invest.
Yeah. I know what I'm about to say is very controversial, and I'm not even 100% sure if you agree with me on this. But like their OSAP, for if you're not listening from Ontario, I'm sure other provinces have something the exact same. But it's pretty much, it depends on your parent income. So, well, for me, I guess it really depends on your age that you choose to go to university or college. So for me, it was all dependent on my dad's income because my parents are separated. So Ruben's parents are together. So it depends on their combined income. Mm-hmm. So throughout each household, it's completely different because everybody makes a completely different amount of income. So some people might get $1,000 and it might be all loans, it might be all grants, but other people could get $10,000 and it could be all loans, all grants. But where I stand on it is, even if you think you don't need OSAP, look and see what you can get. Like if you can get majority of it as a grant, meaning you don't have to pay it back and it's only like a $300 loan, you can might as well grab that, take it and put the grant to the stock market, because $300, obviously it might not be $300, but that's not that excessive of an amount to pay back. Like I always just think, even if you are convinced that you don't need it, look into it, because it's, I think both ways, it could go both ways.
Well, just the point that I would make on that is that a lot of people start to obsess with the idea of getting out of school debt-free. But I think that you can still get out of school debt-free even when you start with some debt,
mm-hmm.
right? You could turn that money into more money.
Mm-hmm.
And so based on that premise, I would agree with you.
Yeah.
If you're responsible and you manage your personal finance well,
yeah.
then I think you should benefit from this. You have 4 years to turn that money into a greater sum of money.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're on top of your stuff, then you should be able to.
Yeah, I was so convinced I was going to go through. I said, I'm going to go through university debt-free. I'm not going to, every summer I'm going to work it off and I'm going to pay it back. And now I'm just like, well, it doesn't make sense to me now to pay it back right now.
Oh, yeah.
Like for me, right, it did. But now it doesn't.
And I totally see what you're saying. I mean, I guess I was a little bit the same, where I mm-hmm. wish I could have paid in cash for all my schooling for the 4 years. But I think that I can turn the OSAP money into something greater. Mm-hmm. I'm very confident. And after the 6-month grace period that OSAP gives you, mm-hmm. once I'm graduated, I'm going to focus a lot more on paying back the loan. Like, that's going to be a top priority, since that will be.
Yes. Yeah, of course. Interest. Of course. I think one of the things for me and like for people to remember is, just because you have debt doesn't mean you don't have money coming in.
Yeah.
Like I have OSAP debt right now, but that doesn't mean the stock market isn't paying it off. Like it might be visually, if you search up my name or my social security number, like you're going to see I'm in debt, but at the same time, like my stocks have paid it back. So just because there's a negative point there doesn't always mean that you're in debt. It just means you haven't paid it back yet.
Yeah, I think that's a good point to kind of close the whole invest in pay yourself first mm-hmm. segment.
Now it's my favorite one. No. We covered your favorite. Now it's my favorite.
Yes, let's move on to your favorite.
Okay, so business. Starting a business. So this is just essentially investing your money in creating a value for other individuals. This could be a service. This could be a course, a product, anything like that. So side hustles can be anything. I really want to do a full episode on this, and I know Ruben does as well, just because it's something I am so passionate about. Like, I just think university students should, there's something you can do. There's always something you can do for others, whether you tutor, whether you write a book, like there's always something you can do, but not every university student knows this. So I think that's just such a huge way to make money. And I think everybody should be doing this. So if you want an episode, I am so passionate about it, as you could probably tell. Please email, please DM us, because I would love to do it.
We definitely will be making an episode. I mean, if there's a lot of interest, we'll probably make it sooner than we have planned to
do. Yeah, yeah.
But I totally agree with you. This is another one that I'm passionate with. Like, I feel like most students overlook the fact that they can make money while they study.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a full-time commitment.
My thing is with business is such a broad term. Like, you study it in university. It's a course you can take. Not everything you do. Business is just such a scary term. Like, not everything you start. It is considered a business, but it doesn't have to be this long 20-year thing. It can just simply be enough to get you through university. But I feel like side hustles are so looked past. Like, if that makes sense. Yeah. They're just... not disrespected, but for lack just of a better overlooked. Term, yeah, it's just businesses are the top, and side hustles are the bottom. Like, there's not a good safe in between. So it's just, you think side hustles are, oh, just a little bit of cash, but side hustles can make you enough to pay off your university debt. Like, you can turn side hustles into a business. And so it's just one of those things where don't overlook it. Like, the littlest things that you think you could do, if you're a drawer, draw something. Make it, turn it into a side hustle. Why not?
Yeah. There's many freelancer websites that you can go to. And once again, once we have that episode, we'll go in depth.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, just on the top of my head, I know of Fiverr, where it's just freelancers doing work for small companies or individuals. And there's always money to be made. If you can create value for someone, there's always money to be made.
Yes.
And that's why we added this as a subcategory, since when you invest in a business, you're really investing in yourself. You're taking a risk on you.
You are the business. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, when you buy a stock, well, you're buying part of that business, and who's running that business? Who's making the decisions for that business?
You're investing in Jeff Bezos or Amazon or Apple. Or
it's the CEOs and the board teams.
Yeah.
When you invest in your own business, your own side hustle, you are the board
team. Yeah, you make all the decisions. So investing in a business is extremely risky, like first starting off one. Sometimes you need a lot of capital to get started most times.
Typically, yeah.
But when the returns come, they're limitless. Like, there is no...
That's a good point.
There's just no end to it. If you see a future for it, it might not end. So when starting a business, you should familiarize yourself with failure, since it will probably happen. I know us, we have tried to start numerous businesses. So many, and none really have worked.
Not yet.
Yeah, we're still getting there. But it's because of those failures that now we're both in something that we see a future for. And we know what to do. We know not to do. We know how to advertise and everything like that. So familiarizing yourself with failure, it's just inevitable in life, in business, in marketing, and in literally everything.
Failure builds character. Like, it's just a fundamental step on your journey.
Yeah.
Of becoming the best version of you.
Yeah, if you don't fail, I feel like you wouldn't succeed at such a rate that you would if you didn't.
And now, like you said, it's just very risky to invest in businesses. Yeah. Most businesses fail. And here's a statistic that will kind of put that in perspective. 20% of new businesses fail during the first 2 years, 45% during the first 5 years, 65% during the first 10 years. And so that leaves us with about only 25% make it to that 15-year milestone. That doesn't even mean that these businesses are making millions of dollars in revenue. That just means that they're still active businesses.
Yeah. The thing, see, now here's my thing again with this statistic, it becomes so scary because you don't have to start a business to be in it for the long run. Like, yes, it kind of makes sense. Obviously, like, you hope it succeeds, but you don't have to be in it for 10 years. Like, you, it's just something that you don't have to do. Like, a side hustle, if it gets you through university, stop after university. Yeah. If it's too much to put in to take out, just, you can stop it at any point. But the things that are free, like, I know Amazon has something where you can publish a book and it's free of cost. They just charge you once somebody purchases it. So I think it's like $3 for when somebody purchases it. Like, they just take that money out of the overall price.
Yeah, it's like
printing,
really.
Yeah, printing costs and everything like that. All you have to do is write the book. That's literally it.
You produce the content.
Exactly.
And then they do the rest.
Exactly.
So they're entitled to some money. That makes sense.
And so if it's free, if your business fails, that's not even a bad thing because you didn't have to put any money down to start it. So if it fails in the first 2 years and even if you made $15, I would still say that's a win.
Yeah. I think you gain more from the experience than you do from the actual revenues and costs and just a profit. Like, I think you learn more about running a business so you can do it in the future and just about yourself, really.
Yeah, I do definitely think starting off with something that's, like, you don't need a lot of capital for, something that you don't need to invest
a whole lot of
money into it.
Yeah.
Like the Amazon Kindle, I think it's called, like, draw a picture book. Do what suits you. Or Etsy. I know there's a lot of people on Etsy who sell their own products. I've never been on Etsy, but you can make your own products. Or I don't, like, make bracelets. Like, remember when people would make those elastic bracelets?
And
sell those.
On Fiverr, there's so many things that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can be a consultant for marketing if you're very good at marketing and you've built many Instagram pages that do well.
You don't even need a degree.
Just you could
offer portfolio.
Offer your services, and there's many people that are demanding this type of skills.
Yeah, and you'll be surprised how much you could get paid for something so simple.
Yeah.
Like, it's so simple. It's scary because not everybody is doing it. And as I said earlier, I think everybody should be doing it. You will be surprised how passionate you will become about it.
And so just another point, and I do agree with everything you said up to this point, but just another point, when we're talking about paying yourself, investing in yourself, we hope that you are allocating the appropriate amount of money into whatever you want to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you want to start a business, maybe every paycheck, you put 20% of your paycheck into a savings account for now to get your business going.
Yeah.
And then maybe 10% in your investing account and maybe 5% in your emergency fund.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think this is a one is the solution to paying yourself. Like, you could do all of these.
Yeah, no, I do agree with that. And it has to be a reasonable amount too. Like, you can't say, oh, I have this amazing, incredible business idea. I'm going to put $3,000 into it. I'm going to take my emergency fund. I'm going to max out. I'm going to take everything out of my stocks and I'm going to put it all into this. Like, that's just not the way to do it.
It's very risky.
Yeah, start off small and just let it grow naturally.
And I will say, since we're so young, it would be the best time to be risky.
Yeah,
and that's why we've really added this into the episode, because we're young. We can afford to make mistakes and big financial mistakes and come out on the other side a better person.
Mm-hmm.
We have that lenience with our age.
Yeah. I feel like I said this either in the last episode we did or maybe because we talk about it so often.
We do.
But it's just, there is nobody who is depending on you right now. And what I mean by that is you don't have, well, maybe people, I don't have a kid, but maybe people our age do have a kid. But if you don't, these are the people I'm referencing. Like, you don't have a child to support. Sometimes maybe you don't have a pet. You don't, the only person you need to really focus on is yourself. So if you're able to sustain yourself, take more risks. Just, if you live with your parents, take more risks. That's not a bad thing. It just gives you an open-ended area to what you could possibly do with that. If you don't have to pay rent, take advantage of that. Like, there are so many things that people look past because they think, oh, I need to save this money. I'm not spending rent, but I'm going to spend it on something else. Yeah, spend it on a business.
Yeah.
Put it in stocks.
Yeah, like, appreciate that money.
Mm-hmm.
The opportunity cost of you just holding that money could be more expensive
than
you even realize.
Yeah, it is the best time to start something now or invest now, because you probably won't be able to do it in the future if you have a 2-year-old daughter who needs to pay for daycare and and diapers and food for 3 people.
Once you fall into the just living paycheck by paycheck, it's quite difficult to come out of that.
Mm-hmm.
I know some people do it, and power to them. But the whole purpose of this podcast is to inform you now. Start early and let's take it from there. It's a lot easier when you start early.
It's so crazy how many people you listen to and they'll all say, like, I wish I started sooner. I wish. Yes. And even us, we say that so many times. Like, I wish I started 3 years ago. So we're telling you, start now.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. Like, we're still extremely young.
Yeah.
But, man, if I started when I was 15...
Yeah.
I feel like I could have done so much more.
Yeah, you'd be 3 years ahead.
Yeah, man. But, you know, if you haven't started, start now. And when we say start now, we mean start the journey of seeking financial freedom, focusing on your actual personal finances.
Yeah.
Which is one of the most important things in life, really. Because that opens up the freedom. It buys you time to do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. Write it down. Just take the first step. It doesn't have to be investing into it. Just think about it. Even just what you like. Make a note and leave it in your notebook. It doesn't have to be something so extreme. Just the little things to get you started.
Shall we move on to our last form of investing in yourself?
Yes.
This one is education. And when I was writing up the show notes for the episode, I first labeled this as schooling, and I was referring to going to university and just going to school. But then upon reviewing it, I decided a better label for this is education. Since not only can you go to school, but also buy some books to learn about whatever you want to learn about. That's education. Education is like, it's the process of learning, and you shouldn't be limited to just school. I know a very famous person once said, I never let schooling get in the way of my education.
Yeah, that's...
And I don't know who said it, but it's a very impactful quote. And I'm not trying to downplay the importance of schooling, like going to college or university.
Of course.
Which is very important, but also taking time to learn for yourself what you like to do and things of
making it better.
Yeah. And now for this topic, we're probably going to stick to college and university, because I've already mentioned, you know, buying courses, buying books. You've bought many books for me so that I could expand.
I've bought you plenty.
So that I could expand my education on personal finance. I'm very grateful for that, by the way. And I know you've bought courses. Do you want to talk a little bit to that?
Yeah, so I've bought 3 courses to help with my side hustle business, whatever label it wants to have. And they're pricey. Like, the first course was $300. The second course was $100 because I bought the first course. It was like a little discount thing. But then the last course I just bought was $550, I think. So, like, they're expensive. You can't downplay. And the one I want to buy is like $800. And there's so many that I want to look at that are $2,000. Mm. So they're expensive, but there are some that'll teach you everything for a cheaper price, but it's so worth it. Like, just never stop learning. Even when you think you know, you don't.
Yeah, that's when you fall into that trap.
Yeah.
When you think you know it all, you don't know anything at all.
You don't know anything, yeah. And like we said, like, taking the first step, buy a book. Even if it sits on your nightstand, just buy it. Just go out and make the action of wanting to know more.
And once you pay that money for it, you're gonna feel accountable to read it. Like, you won't just leave it on that nightstand. You might leave it for a few days, but every time you see it, you'll see, I spent $11 on that book.
Yeah.
So then hopefully eventually you'll open it up.
I do that with you too. Like, the books I bought you, I see on the shelf and I'm like, I wonder what that's about. Like, I bought you that Netflix one. And I was like, I like Netflix. I watch Netflix all the time. I want to know behind the scenes. Like, how did it start?
The CEO, what did he do to make
it happen? Yeah, and it's so interesting. I don't think people understand how interesting it actually is to learn about someone's process, because it's not like, I'm not a very numbers person. When it comes to business, I would prefer to be on the social media marketing side of things rather than the stats. Like, that's just not my area of expertise. So when you think of business, you think of numbers and stats and percentages, but these books is just people's stories.
Yeah, I think, like, that's the main part that people overlook.
Yeah, it's just really what they thought and their thought process. That's it. And it's beautiful to read it and to be able to live in their shoes for the 30 minutes it takes to read those pages.
I myself also did buy a course about how to determine the value of a stock. And this was it wasn't an expensive course.
How much was it?
It cost me about $100.
That's still money.
Yeah, no, it's still a lot more than most people would be willing to pay at my age. I believe I was in grade 10 when I did this.
Oh, wow.
And so I was passionate and I wanted to learn more in depth about what I was putting my money into. Yeah. And I learned a lot. I still have the course now. I look back at it every now and then.
Those are the best courses. A lifetime.
Yeah, it's just something that you hold on for a while. You learn something new. And I think this is good character development as well. You learn things that you like and dislike, and then consequentially you learn more about yourself. But moving on to the university and college side of things, in Canada, on average, undergraduate tuition is typically $6,500 a year.
Yeah, that sounds right.
So over the 4 years, that's about $26,000 over the 4 years in just tuition. Now that's not living costs, food, or anything of the such, which, as we know,
it's expensive. Some
people I know are leasing and they pay around $1,000 a month.
I wish. 25 could easily turn into 50.
It is a lot of money.
Yeah, and even in the States, like, I don't know where people are listening to, but Ruben and Adrian actually went to school in the States, and him comparing his tuition with our tuition is crazy. I know some tuitions in the States are like $100,000 for a year. I'm like, what?
Yeah, no, he pays a lot, and I hope he doesn't mind me saying, but he had an academic scholarship. So that helped him a lot, but without that, it's probably double would pay here.
Yeah, it is crazy.
And Adrian, if you're listening, I apologize if you wanted to keep that information disclosed. Okay, let's talk about why you would invest in going to university.
For me personally, it was because of what I wanted to do, but you do this and hope that you will have an income that is greater than the income you could do without a degree.
That makes perfect sense, right? Like, that's every investment, right? Every time you invest, it's to get a larger return, right? Like, if I invest $100 today, I'm hoping that by doing so, I'll get $110 in the future.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with university, college, or any post-secondary apprenticeships, anything like that. You do that so that in the future, you can obtain more money. And that is as true as it is in university as in the stock market. It's just investing, again, in yourself. You're making yourself worth more to companies.
Yeah.
And that, in result, they pay you more.
And when we say university, like university or college, we're just saying university because we both go to university, but there's no shame or no high horse to sit on if you go to either one.
Yeah,
like, they're
apologies.
Both the same. Yeah, no. And I'm not saying, like, what you said, anything wrong, but we just both go to university. The household talks about university all the time. Yes. So it's just our go-to word for schooling.
And I was watching a video from TD Ameritrade. I didn't know they had a YouTube channel to start off.
I now know that too.
It was quite interesting. The video was highlighting the median earnings over a 40-year career of people with high school diplomas, people who went to school for 2 years to learn a trade, bachelor's, PhD, and an MD. And the results are actually quite shocking.
Yeah.
So let me read you this list here. So over the 40 years, a high school student or graduate earned about $1.3 million over the 40 years, which I believe if you average that down, it's going to be around $40,000.
Yeah.
Now, with the trait, the 2-year program, 1.7 million. So you see the $400,000 jump going to school for 2 years. The bachelor, which is typically 4 years program, that was $2.3 million.
I think that's what majority of university students are in.
Yeah, if you average that out per year, that's around $60,000.
Do you know if this was in Canadian dollars or US dollars?
I believe it was US dollars, but I
Okay.
could be mistaken.
Yeah, no. I was just wondering, just 'cause it's still a good amount of money
I
either
know
way.
TD is very prominent in both Canada and the United States. They're a very well-run establishment.
Yes, they are.
When we talk about the PhD, this was $3.3 million over the 40 years, and the MD, the medical degree, was $3.6 million.
So the difference of high school from 1.3 to the medical degree, which is at 3.6.
$2.3 million difference. But granted, high school, once you're done, you could go out and start working in the field. And medical degree, you're going to be in school longer. You'll take out more loans. So you have to start weighing the pros and the cons in a financial perspective. Like if you go to school for a bachelor's, you're expected to make $1 million more over 40 years than if you stopped at high school. And for some people, this is worth it. And for others, it is not. And that's completely a personal decision, a decision you should discuss with,
Friends and family
yeah,
and
your guardians and, people who mean something to you. And it's different for everyone.
It's a very controversial topic, but
Yes, there is no right answer, I
yeah,
would say.
there isn't.
Like a lot of it is circumstantial.
Yeah, I would agree.
And just another point is that graduate loans typically have higher interest rates than undergraduate loans. Our OSAP is like 2 to 3%,
Yes,
while a
yeah.
graduate loan can range from 6 to 8%.
Oh, wow.
So it's a substantial difference.
Yeah.
So is it worth going to school, I don't know, 7 years in total?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes more.
Again, pros and cons. You gotta weigh
Yeah.
it out and talk to your loved ones.
So to conclude, just some benefits of paying yourself first, and there's many benefits. Let me just say that first.
Yeah,
But
we just tried to capture the main ones.
so you start building up your portfolio of assets. That is, if you invest or if you learn trades, I would say that's still under your belt. That's your portfolio. You have savings just in case anything happens. You build that emergency fund. It's better safe to be sorry. I'm sure you've heard that a million times.
Yep.
You invest to make yourself a better version of you.
This is huge.
I think it's pretty self-explanatory. I don't know if
Yeah.
I have to
Yeah.
talk more to it, but you could also find more things you're interested in if you start investing in things like books and online courses. You could really see what you're passionate about before you pay that large amount to go to school for it.
Yeah. Another thing, sorry to add on, another thing with online courses is those can be international. Like you can take online courses, which is what my first two courses were, and I think it was based in the States.
Oh,
So
okay.
it's not like schooling, like university or college, because you have to go, you don't have to, but it costs more to go further out. Whereas online courses, you could take courses from China or take courses from Australia, or it doesn't really matter, but you get a variety of different standpoints because everybody's from somewhere different.
Yeah, and you're looking for that content too, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And the last point I have here is that hopefully you will increase your income.
Which is the whole point of this
Yep,
podcast.
that is why we're
It
here.
comes full
I
circle.
think that's probably why you guys are here too, is to really increase that income.
I think so.
Now, Delaney, I'd like to thank you for coming on to
Yeah,
episode
it was
five.
fun. This is another amazing topic, and the looking at the list of what else is to come, so many more amazing topics.
I'm looking forward to it, and really, I hope everyone enjoyed. So, once again, if you're new, if you haven't heard me say it before, you could find our Instagram at virgin.investors if you want to send us an email saying how we did, Or if you have an episode idea, you can email us at virgininvestors@yahoo.com. And lastly, if you want to see the show notes, which I personally typed up myself, you could go to virgininvestors.info. Well, I think that concludes the episode.
I think that does.
See ya.